Good morning. I'm going to call this session of the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner to order. It's June 9th, 2016. And we're here for the 9 a.m. calendar, which is a continuation of a hearing that we opened 2 weeks ago to look at the Central Kitsap School District's application for a conditional use permit dealing with the transportation center, food service, and warehouse. At the conclusion of that hearing last time, we decided to continue the hearing in order to obtain additional information from the applicant focused on the impacts of the bus transportation in and out of the facility, some information on a sound wall, exactly where it would be located in the construction of that wall, and the integration of traffic mitigation with the noise studies and the bus transportation plan. And I believe that the applicant has compiled that information, and the focus then of the hearing today will be on those elements. At the last hearing on this application, we covered a wide range of topics as we were looking at whether or not the application as proposed would be consistent with the criteria established by the Board of Commissioners in order to approve a conditional use permit. And what it got down to was the need to collect additional information before that determination could be made on these topics. So we're not going to go through the entire application again. At the last hearing, we did have staff present an overview of the application, including some PowerPoint slides and a description with some precision of what it would entail. That has already been done, so we're not going to go through that again, but we will focus on the additional information provided by the applicant and then allow anyone that's here that has any questions or comments or concerns about the new information presented today to raise those questions, comments, or concerns. Again, I'm not going over the entire application, but we're focused on the bus traffic, the noise studies, and the sound wall, and how those three relate together. Is the applicant prepared to present that additional information? And will it be you then that will do that? Welcome back to the podium. And those that testified last time continue to testify under oath and build the record for this decision. Welcome back.
And good morning.
You have more information to give to us this morning.
Yes, I do. Good morning. Lisa Klein, AHBL, representing the Central Kitsap School District. At the hearing, we heard pretty much what you had just summarized, and we did prepare additional information. So I'd like to provide you with copies of a few things this morning for you, the record. The first is this additional PowerPoint presentation that I would present that is, I think it's about five slides total.
Okay, let's make sure we have that with an exhibit number. Exhibit 32, five PowerPoint slides.
And then also for your use, I made some large size copies of some of those exhibits because of the type on there. They may be a little bit difficult to read. So these are just additional copies in a large size for your use.
Thank you.
One of the things that we heard, first of all, we took very good notes of the comments from the neighbors. And one of the things, Mr. Examiner, that you recommended was that we make contact with the neighbors. And Robin Shoemaker did that and got some email information. She's not able to be here today. She had a prior commitment. Mm-hmm. So I'm relaying on to you that what has occurred is that with her team's assistance, we prepared a memo and emailed that to the neighbors Monday evening. So I have a copy of that memo responding to their comments that I'd also like to provide for the record.
Okay, very good. That will be marked as Exhibit 33. Memo to neighbors. And during your presentation, you will be going into more detail each of these exhibits. Is that correct?
I will. And I will for the most part, I will be focusing on the topics that you mentioned, although some of the comments from the neighbors we did want to respond to, and I'll just highlight those briefly. But I also want you to be aware that in the audience today are both the director and the assistant director of the Transportation Division for the Central Kitsap School District, Katie Knepper and Kyle Johnson. So if anything specific to their operations that I've not provided in our summary, we can always bring them up here. Mm-hmm. Also here is our traffic engineer, Catherine Cassidy, and then the project architect, Bob Lindstrom. So let's begin with the presentation, beginning with this memo where we start with the traffic issues. Mm-hmm. What we heard in the hearing from the neighbors is that they were concerned about additional cut-through traffic using Northwest Cascade Street. They were also concerned about traffic at the intersection of Dickey and Northwest Cascade Street. And also, one of the neighbors located further to the south was concerned about big trucks speeding through the neighborhood. On that last topic, we didn't directly respond to that because we don't really feel like that's a school district project associated comment. It's probably more of an enforcement, county enforcement issue. So the Central Kitsap School District's traffic consultant, when this project began, the process is that she confers with Kitsap County staff. And in that consultation, they determine what are the appropriate study areas to be looked at. And in that, the areas were determined to be Dickey Road, which is located along the project frontage, right here. And then several intersections, which included the intersection of Dickey Road and Northwest Apex Road, the intersection of Anderson Hill Road and Apex Road, the intersection of Provost and Anderson Hill Road, and then further down here at the south, Newberry Hill Road with Dickey Road. So her study responded to that, what those trips would be at each of those intersections. This particular figure here shows you, specific to the peak hours, what those numbers would be. This also shows that in general, because of the way the site is designed, that there is this, for the most part, right turn leaving the site, and for the most part, a right turn entering the site. And that is designed, again, primarily the purpose of this flow of traffic to accommodate an easy in and easy out and good flow of the traffic. With regard to the concern about Northwest Cascade Road, this map here shows, point to it, here's the site right here in the center. Here's what Northwest Cascade Road. So the comment was a concern for cut-through traffic. This was not included, this roadway was not included as one of the areas to be studied, so we don't have anything specific from the study to report to. But in just, you know, general understanding of traffic patterns and how the roadways are used, it's kind of a circuitous route. There's a stop sign here, there's a stop sign here, and there's another stop sign at Provost Road. So, you know, versus the arterial located up here on Northwest Anderson Hill Road route. So it's very possible that there will be some cut-through traffic, but we doubt that the numbers would be significant. Additional information that would help, I think, in understanding how the traffic will be distributed throughout the day is that there are many different uses for the site, as we described in our earlier testimony. The bus traffic in particular serves all three, you know, age groups of the K through 12 system, from the elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools. They all have different start and stop times, also different routes. Some routes are longer than others. And what that means is that throughout the day, the bus trips occur in a progression. They're not all leaving at the same time. And so that ends up resulting in less like queuing occurring on the site. It results in less idling occurring on the site and more even trip distribution. Before we move on to the topic about the next one I want to talk about is air pollution, but we did hear some comments about stormwater, and so I'm not really going to go there. But what we heard from the comments from the neighbors were that they were concerned about stormwater entering their property, harming their drain field, and the location of the stormwater pond. And at the last hearing, the project civil engineer addressed those comments, and we just repeated that in the memorandum that we provided to the neighbors. The other comment that we heard had to do with air pollution from the buses or emissions. So we have a little more information about that. What we know is that there are at least four agencies that regulate air emissions. In general, the EPA provides guidance to Washington State, who provides guidance to Central Kitsap School District as far as how to regulate the emissions. And one of the ways that they do that is how long buses can idle. So it, coming from the top, there's a general goal that the buses are to idle no more than 3 minutes at a time. And what the school district does to regulate that is they have installed specialized equipment on the buses, and it actually tracks idling for each bus, both on-site and on-site during their trips throughout the day, to be able to, you know, monitor how the drivers are doing with controlling that idling. Idling is further controlled by, as I described before, that kind of phased rollout of the buses as they're leaving. They are not stacking up and idling to exit the site because they are rolling out in progression. One of the most important ways to control emissions is to maintain the buses. This occurs through annual inspections through the Washington State Patrol. It's mandatory that 100% of the buses are inspected by the State Patrol every year. In addition, they also do random testing of 25% of the district's buses throughout the year. In 2007, the district received a grant from the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, and they retrofitted their buses. So their older buses were brought up to current standards specific to the handling of emissions in 2007. The technology, however, is constantly improving. New technology uses this state-of-the-art selective catalytic reduction technology. They have an additive that they apply to the diesel exhaust fluid. It converts oxides of nitrogen to a harmless particulate emission, and that is what you're seeing on the new buses that are coming online. In those buses, we're seeing the district is buying like 5 to 8 new, as there were, the old ones are going out of commission, then they're bringing in these new state-of-the-art bus systems. With regard, moving on now to noise, some of the comments that we heard was they were concerned about hearing the noise every morning. This is from the neighbors. We also heard that they wanted more details of the sound wall, as did you, Mr. Examiner. So we prepared some exhibits to help demonstrate a little better how that works on the site. The exhibit that we're showing right here, this is from a plan view. And in red, you'll see the locations of the sound wall. The western half of the site has an 8-foot-tall sound wall. It's located, it's approximately 50 feet in areas, it might be just a little bit more, from the north property line. And on the eastern side, the sound wall is 12 feet tall. In addition, on the graphic, you can see the area that is going to be graded. This is where some vegetation will be removed. This area here, and then right along the property line, along the 50-foot line here. The remaining vegetation that you see in here will be staying. In addition, this line, these green dots that you see, are the trees that are proposed to be planted, and these are blue cypress trees. They eventually get to about a 50-foot height. They're about 8 feet tall when they are planted.
Where's the break between the 8-foot and the 12-foot heights?
The break is shown right here and that break is required in order to maintain access to the stormwater pond. I have some additional exhibits here. We then went and did a few cross sections. So this shows some distances and what is occurring between the adjacent homes and the property and the uses on the property. So at this particular western location, location A, you see the location of the home. Here we have about a 72-foot distance to the property line. There are trees located in the rear of this property. And then we have an additional approximately 50 feet to the sound wall. It should be noted that right here on the property line is also a solid board fence. And then the sand wall, as I mentioned. And then this is the area of the driveway where the buses will be exiting the site. And here's another cross-section. And this one shows a little bit further to the east, more in the center of the site. And this shows a 214-foot separation from the residence to the property line. Again, the fence on the property line. The vegetation, and it's approximately 130 feet, I believe. I'm having trouble reading that, to the 12-foot high sound wall. And this area right here in the middle is the area of the stormwater pond. And then lastly, one more cross-section further to the east, showing a distance of about 71 feet from the residence to the fence, the buffer area, the stormwater pond, and that's about another 140 feet to the 12-foot high sound wall. And then this is just an illustration photograph of the type of CMU block that will be used. The wall hasn't been designed yet, but it'll be something very representative of this. In our memo, we included an explanation of Kitsap County Code Title 1028, which regulates noise impacts to the neighboring properties. We referenced the figures that were in the noise study that depicted the noise levels by color as they dissipated throughout the site. Those were done under several scenarios, worst case scenarios included, including if all activities are operating at one time. And that was also further explained in the table that was in the noise study, which I cut and paste into that memorandum you have. And basically what that shows is that under each of these scenarios, that the noise levels were predicted to pass, and in other words, be under the allowed noise levels per code. The noise study that we provided that was dated May was completed after the acousticians visited the existing facility, and they took noise samples from the existing operation. And then they were able to use those with their model to predict these outcomes. Let me back up just one exhibit here. With regard to the buffer, this landscape buffer that is at a minimum 50 feet along the north property line. I think it's important to note that Kitsap County Code, Section 17385.027B, it requires that a non-residential use located next to a residential use provide a 10-foot wide screening buffer. That screening buffer is defined, there's a couple of options. One could be a double row of trees, or it could be a single row of trees plus a fence. And in this case, this project is exceeding the code requirement because it's providing both the 6-foot fence. It is also providing an additional 40 feet of landscape buffer in that area through a combination of native vegetation retention in addition to plantings. And it provides a total separation from the north property line to the bus parking area of approximately 140 feet. The total distance to the nearest residence on the east side is about 210 feet versus on the west side it's actually about 120 feet. In the hearing, we heard concerns from the neighbors about lighting and potential light pollution, and we just wanted again to refer to the exhibit that's in the record that shows that there is actually zero light spill to adjacent properties. Further, with the addition of the sound walls, those are going to further reduce, for example, bus or vehicle lights spilling to the properties. Additional comments we heard a concern about the loss of the kids walking trail to Silverdale Elementary. It should be noted that the district, the one that's there now, was not put there by the district, and this project will be fencing the perimeter, and the kids will be encouraged to use the new sidewalk that will be installed on Dickey Road. And this is really a safety and liability issue for the district, that once the site is developed, it does need to be a safe and secure facility. So the kids will be encouraged to use the new sidewalk, and that trail will no longer be accessible. We heard a comment that we responded to from the Kitsap Humane Society about construction impacts on the roadway. That was addressed by the engineer. The water line is not going to be replaced on Dickey Road. One of the questions was, why this site? Ms. Shoemaker addressed that, but we think it's worth repeating. The existing facility is aging. It is not efficient in its layout or space, sense of the space that is needed to fully operate the facilities. Access is an issue there as well. And it was approved by the voters in 2011 to take a look at a new location. So a site selection process did occur. Several properties were looked at, and this one was determined to be the one that was most cost-effective for the neighbors. It is also more efficient because it co-locates existing operations, and it also provides this direct route to the arterials. So our last statement for this presentation today was just to ask for your approval of this project. We believe that this has been designed well. Its centralized location is fully buffered by vegetation on the north, east, and west sides. Locating facilities in the center such as that creates further distance from the neighbors and allows for further buffering. The circulation of the site, again, allows for this easy in and easy out, also further serves to reduce impacts. We've demonstrated that the noise levels will be at or below the code allowed noise levels. There's zero light spill to the neighbors. The stormwater will be infiltrated on site, will not be impacting the neighboring properties. And the emissions are meeting the current standards and using state-of-the-art technology. So with that, we take any further questions, either of myself or our experts who are here today.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lisa Klein, for your presentation. The reason we're looking at the impacts is that's what the Board of Commissioners has directed that we do, to make a determination that there are not significant adverse impacts in surrounding properties and that there's some compatibility with what you're proposing with surrounding development. So that's what your presentation was about.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you have other information you want to provide or your client, would be appropriate then at this time, I think, to have any public comment. Would that be okay with you?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, so we'll allow that to happen, and then you can see who on your team you'd like to have respond to any comments that we've received.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll turn to that now. There are a few people that signed up that said they would like to comment. And the first I have listed is Tommy Allen. Tammy. Yes, that's an important distinction, isn't it? Excuse me. Okay. Well, would you like to comment today? And then followed by last name is Schaefer, sitting right next to Tammy. Okay, so you would follow. And then it looks like Pat Jackson, very good. Dennis Koblein and Marilyn Perry. Marilyn Perry. Okay. Well, we'll take those in the order that you signed up. Is there anyone in addition to those that signed up that might want to comment? Okay, we'll allow you to do so. I remember a number of you from last hearing, so it's good that you're here on the follow-up because the questions you raised is why we continue the hearing to get more information. So if you'd like to come forward, Tammy Allen, begin the public comment, and I'll allow the rest of you to kind of follow in order, and if you've decided someone has already raised the questions or comments that you had, you can pass and go on to the next one. And I don't remember you from the last hearing.
No, I'm okay. Representing my mom and dad.
All right. Well, then I'll first ask that you take the oath by raising your right hand. You swear to tell truth in testimony you give today.
I do.
Thank you.
In regards to Ms. Klein's statement regarding the trees, one of the things that I had looked up on the internet was that, and I'm not sure everybody knows this, that trees are the longest living organisms on the planet. They also provide the earth with the greatest natural resources. They also create a better air supply for us. A mature tree will create 70 times more. A mature tree removes almost 70% times more pollution than a newly planted tree will, as well as trees give about 260 pounds of oxygen per year. That means two mature trees can supply enough oxygen annually to support a family of four. The other thing that I found out was that the shade and wind buffering, which since we've been having a lot more windstorms lately, those trees prevent the wind from knocking other trees over into our property line or taking out other people's properties, which then reduces insurance rates as well for that. And over the course of its life, a single tree can absorb 1 ton of carbon dioxide. Can't even read my own stuff with these glasses. And the other questions that, you know, we were coming up with was my dad had also mentioned a waste of taxpayer dollars for this when you have other areas that can be used, other vacant buildings that can be remodeled and reused that are just sitting there wasting away using up property that's not being used by anybody. Same as what happens with people. We have a lot of elderly people up there that have congestive heart failure, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, allergies like I have, which those fumes, and I leave my window open every year, all year long, even if it's winter out, my window's open. So when those buses start up, if I can hear the dump trucks from the asphalt up on Dickey Road and the loading of the dump trucks from the dump site, I know I'm going to be able to hear those buses when they start up in the morning. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, I really don't want to be woken up at 5 a.m. when I don't have anywhere I've got to go. The other thing that we were looking at as well as the impact on wild animals. You know, I'm a big animal advocate. I don't want to see more wild animals being killed because we're not only taking away their food source, but we're taking away where they can build their homes, where they can have their children, their babies. Anything like that. We're already getting wild animals in some of our backyards. The drain field and the septic pumps, that's one thing my dad wanted to address was that, you know, how's that going to affect our pumps? You know, if the power should go out, what's going to happen if we can't flush our toilets and everything like that? Where is that going to go? Because it's going to affect our pumps because it's going to back up into the main pump and then it's going to back up into all of our yards into the individual sump pumps that some of the yards have. As far as drive-through traffic, there already is a lot of drive-through traffic. I mean, I've watched some of the cars. I know who most of my neighbors are, so I know who most of the cars are and where they turn off at. There are a lot of drive-throughs up through there, and speeding is a big issue. I mean, I have been out there where I've been walking, and I've had to yell at cars because they're
going so fast through that area that you're taking the chance that you're going to get hit.
Could you explain what you mean by drive-through? Maybe drive-through, if you can put that
means they come up from Provost mm-hmm. onto Cascade Street and up to Dickey, so they can bypass Newbury Hill and Anderson Hill Road.
Give me that again. I'm trying to follow.
The traffic comes from Provost Road up Cascade Street,
okay,
all the way up to Dickey, and that makes it so they avoid the Newbury Hill Street, or they avoid the Anderson Hill traffic lights as well. It's the same as the traffic lights at Newbury Hill.
I see.
The other thing that, you know, I had a question about was why can't, like I said, I said it earlier, old buildings be utilized and refurbished instead of always building new? Why does everybody got to have something new instead of utilizing what you've got but just remodeling it? And the other thing, too, was that I noticed that Ms. Klein had said that there was information available. Well, when I was looking over my dad's papers that he gave me, I didn't see a website. You know, where's this supposed website that people can go to get the information that they need? What do they do about people that don't have Internet service? There are some elderly up there on our street that don't have computers. My mom's not computer literate. So I'm the only one besides my dad and family that knows computers and knows how to look information up. The environmental impact of destroying more trees. Again, it falls back to, you know, we're already destroying our environment. We're already causing global warming. Why do we need to remove more trees? Mm-hmm. So I think I've hit, you know, all my highlights that I had on here, going through her paperwork that she had sent out. And I did have, I printed off the tree facts for you, so I don't know if.
Oh, yes, thank you. Let's submit that, and we'll have that entered into the record as an Exhibit 34, and it'll be part of what I consider in making a decision.
Otherwise, I've hit all the things that my dad had requested that I hit for you.
You did a good job. They were very, very well detailed and specified. So thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll allow the applicant to respond to those after we hear from others.
Okay.
So thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next, you want to come forward? You need to take the oath this morning by raising your right hand. And you swear to tell truth and testimony you give.
I do.
Thank you. And begin with your name, please.
My name is Liberta Schaefer. I've got some papers for you to look at on diesel exhaust and cancer. And
are those materials you wanted to submit for
the
record?
Yes, these are papers I wanted to submit on children who live close to major transportation hubs and more at risk, are more at risk for cancer, a study shows. And I wanted to present these to you.
Okay, well, let's
they were
get
gotten
them
off the Internet, and it shows where they were gotten everything on studies.
Very good. We'll have those admitted to the record as Exhibit 35. Okay. Did you want to speak to those or just have them submitted?
No, I'd just like to have you look at them and see, because there's quite a bit of it.
Okay. Very good. I will do that.
Thank you
for bringing those to my attention. Good morning.
Good morning.
And do you swear to tell truth and testimony you give today?
I will.
Thank you.
My name is Pat Jackson. My major concerns are the diesel fumes, not only for myself and my neighbors, but I have show dogs. And they're outside in their runs most of the day, starting very early in the morning. So when the buses start up, my dogs are out, and I am concerned about the effect of those fumes on my animals. Also, as Tammy pointed out about the horrible windstorms that we've had lately, and if they take away all those big trees that are back there and put in trees that are only 8 feet tall, it's going to take a long time for them to really be a decent buffer for for when we get those storms.
Mm-hmm. Have you experienced it? How long have you lived in the area?
I've lived there 25 years.
Okay.
And yeah, we've had some really, really bad storms lately. I've lost canopies. I've lost my fences going down, even with the trees that are there. And if they take those big ones out and put in 8-foot ones, we're not going to have enough buffer for those storms at all.
Mm-hmm. And so your concern is that the wind will hit the trees on your property at a higher speed, resulting
exactly.
in them perhaps falling.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. Are there any additional public comments? It looks like, well, there's a gentleman in the back of the room, and then did you want to comment as well? Okay, why don't you come forward first, you indicated earlier, and then the gentleman in the back of the room, and then we'll get some responses to the public comments. Welcome back to this hearing. Could you give your name again, please?
Ann Erickson.
And what do you have to share with us this morning?
I continue to be very concerned about the use of all, again, the use of not taking advantage of other older builders, buildings that could be remodeled, adding more. There's already a lot of industrial traffic up across Sticky Road, and people come up Newberry Hill, turn onto Dixie, and then go around in front of the transfer station. I mean, we've got so much traffic with big vehicles. To add even a few buses is really going to be a strain, especially since they all speed. None of them obey the speed limit. At least they could consider putting a traffic light in where Dickey Road comes down past the transfer station and gets to the point where you would have to turn left to go by the school. It would be ideal if where Dickey Road and Dickey Place meet, there would be a traffic light. That would end having to complain to the sheriff all the time about the speed and the kids drag racing at night. Mm. It gets to be a very quiet road, and then all of a sudden you know that every kid in the county is out there going 40 miles over the speed limit. Hmm. And it's not fun to live in the area, and I have owned my property since 1985. So I kept thinking it'll get better someday, and it's not going to. And this is really going to complicate the lives of the people who live in the area.
So the concern is more and more large vehicle traffic, and then also the increased speeds that are happening.
Yes. So if there could be, if we can't get rid of some of the vehicle traffic, could we at least have a stoplight at Dickey Road and Dickey Place?
Mm-hmm.
That would make a real difference. And I know that some of the larger vehicles that would come out of the Newt Anderson, Dickey Road, Dickey Place, rather, end of the school might not like having to stop and then start up again. But you know what? That would be a lot safer, because I'm thinking that some big vehicle is going to end up hitting a school bus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely worried about the speed on that road.
And there's no stop sign there?
Well, there's a stop sign. There's a slow sign going by the school, and then you make that right turn. But there's no stop sign until you get all the way out to Newberry Hill Road.
Mm-hmm.
So there really isn't any way to slow this down, but a stoplight at that intersection would make such a difference.
Hmm.
So I hope that we will see that. I'm going over to the sheriff's office after this meeting and talk to them, too, because I am tired of worrying about someone crashing down into the backyard of my property because there's nothing, there's no guardrail along there, there's nothing that stops them. if they're going too fast on Dickey Road coming down before you make the turn to the Humane Society, they could easily go off the edge on the right-hand side of the road, and they would end up in my backyard.
Okay.
And that's really all I have to say, is to make people aware of something that hasn't been addressed.
Well, I thank you for being here and bringing that to my attention.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, in the back of the room, do you want to come forward and comment on this application? Oh, okay.
I want you to know I did the right thing.
You did. You did. And were you here last time?
Yes,
you were.
Yes.
So, okay, so you're still under oath, and you're Dennis Koblen, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And back for more comment, you heard Lisa Klein present on behalf of the school district.
Yes.
So what response do you have to that?
Yeah, I just a couple of concerns. One in particular is the traffic on Cascade. What kind of recourse and responsibility does the district take in that whole process? So if we have this project go in and traffic increases like we know it will, those of us have lived there a long time, is the district going to take any responsibility for that? And how do we go about making sure that happens?
Well, that's what this hearing's about, is to look at what might mitigate any impacts.
Yes,
so I'm interested in learning what the impacts might be, and then if they can be reduced, how might those impacts be reduced or addressed?
Okay.
Yeah, because, again, the goal here is we're looking at an application for conditional use permit, and what the Board of Commissioners has said is that we can allow those, but only if there's not materially adverse impacts on the neighborhood and if they can be made compatible with the neighborhood. So that's what our guidance is. So if you're aware of what the impacts might be, and is there any way to mitigate them? And if there isn't, well, that's when an application is denied. So that's what I'm interested in hearing about.
Okay. All right. Let me just collect my thoughts for a moment. Oh, the other question I had of the district is that last time we were concerned about there was a rule about the number of buses that could idle at one time, and how that was policed by the district, whether or not did somebody run out there and say, eighth bus, you can't idle now, or I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember that. Were you here when Lisa Klein spoke to that, the three-minute idle rule and the monitoring
right.
on the buses?
Mm-hmm. Well, the monitoring can happen so that they can check and see when they idle, but
it doesn't shut the bus down.
It doesn't stop 10 buses from idling
mm-hmm.
if you don't do anything with the data.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's another problem that I don't see having a resolution to,
mm-hmm.
at least since the district didn't.
You're more concerned about the enforcement of that rule then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The three-minute idle rule.
And number of buses at one time. I think, wasn't it seven? No more than seven or six?
Anybody remember?
Right. We did hear that at the last hearing.
Yes.
How many would be started and idling at the same time?
Yeah. And they were going to respond, I think, whether there was a rule or a manual or that sort of thing.
I remember that.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding us of that.
So another, my property, I've lived there 32 years. My property is adjacent, to the north border of the site, and right near where the retention pond will be put in.
Okay.
And my particular concern and my neighbors on both sides is with the vegetation being taken out for the retaining pond, it's probably going to encroach into that area that will be a buffer with natural vegetation, because they said that when grading happens, there's going to be some ancillary grading on the sides there to make sure the pond works. And since my property is right up against that border, that amount of screening is going to be very small. And I also have concerns about trees coming down because there are huge trees there that, without that additional depth on that buffer, would put me in danger, I'm afraid.
Well, let's take a bit closer look at that.
Okay.
And I think that was on one of the PowerPoint slides, slide 4. So the proposal is for, what I heard was, is there a wood fence there now?
No.
No. And then vegetation, and your testimony is, appears that would be all removed.
At least most of it.
Yeah. And then thirdly, the sound wall. And did you hear the testimony about that, the 12-foot sound wall? And so your concern is that, well, there's no fence, but the vegetation's removed, then you're left with the sound wall as the buffer.
There'll be some vegetation, I would hope, and then the pond, and then the sound wall towards the south.
Right. And your concern is that's not sufficient buffering. Okay.
Yes.
We need to find out more about that, especially what vegetation might be removed.
Right.
Okay.
The other thing I didn't hear when Ms. Klein was spoke about the, she talked about the east and west distance from the homes and from the I think the parking lot. I don't remember. Is that what it was?
I believe you were talking to the parking lot. The distance from home to parking lot.
You said the east side and the west side. We didn't speak to the north, the properties to the north.
I did have the testimony. I think the figure given was 120 feet, if I recall correctly, between the parking area.
Does that one help?
And the,
is that you?
No. I'm...
property line.
I'm close to that.
Okay, we have a slide up now which seems to depict that area.
Right.
Okay, does that help?
Yeah. My property is to the right there, to the east.
Mm-hmm. This is slide 6.
You can see Cascade where it curves closer to the district property.
Mm-hmm.
And then the retention pond.
And you're showing this as not sufficient distance? Is that the point?
Mainly the buffer. As far as the distance, I don't know how much difference it'll make how close the bus parking is.
So the distance might be fine, but it needs a buffer.
It needs a buffer. I think a large buffer all along the north side would mitigate a lot of the other concerns people have with noise and light and animals, air quality.
Okay. The north side buffer appears to be insufficient the way it's presented now.
I mean, it speaks to the letter of the law. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it speaks to the spirit of a good neighbor on part of the district.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're looking at is compatibility and not having material detrimental impacts. Okay. Well, thank you. Anything further?
I just wanted to add one other thing in terms of the site selection. The district did have a site selection committee, but as far as I could determine when I talked to Robin, was that it was all a district internal process, that there wasn't any attempt for any kind of input from the neighborhood. And hasn't been throughout the process.
And that is a challenge. There was environmental review that we heard about, and that's a process where alternate sites typically would be considered. Mr. Smith, did you have access to those documents? Can you refresh us on the environmental review? Yes, the State Environmental Policy Act. I know that I looked at what's called a SEPA checklist, where the environmental impacts are disclosed. And then in this situation, there was a determination made that there would not be significant adverse environmental impacts. Now, I don't, I have that as Exhibit 22. It doesn't appear to have a date on it.
It's May 10th.
I do see that now, signed on May 10th. And what that triggered was an opportunity to appeal that environmental determination. And it's really hard to know about it. I mean, that's one of the challenges of any land use application. There are certain notice points that go out, and then any interested citizen has an opportunity to appeal. Here, that didn't happen. It makes it difficult for me then, because the site, different site locations, is really something that would be addressed at that time. I understand the concern, and I'm taking note of it, but it's not a decision I can make. I can't say you should choose another site. There is a process for that, and that's typically done in environmental review in a document called an environmental impact statement, where alternate sites are reviewed, environmental impacts looked at, and then the one that appears to have the least environmental impacts, negative impacts, is chosen. But I will make note that you and others wish that would have happened here. And it's something an applicant can choose to do, but it doesn't appear that they chose to do that. But they might have. We're going to hear back from them of what they did in their process. So thank you for bringing those concerns to my attention. I've noted them. I do want to hear back from the applicant in response to those that you raised.
I have some documents, too.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us what they are?
Yeah, there's several letters from local residents that couldn't be here today.
Okay, some comment letters.
And then I have a petition signed by 55 people from the neighborhood opposing the location of this project.
Okay, we will have those entered as part of the record as Exhibits 36. Let's separate the comment letters from the petition. And then Exhibit 37. The reason I'm doing that is I want to let you know that we will allow these in the record. A petition that says I'm against it, I really can't give that any weight, because the focus that we're told about by the court system is to be on those criteria. It's not a vote for and against. So I appreciate that there's, you know, some community displeasure about this proposal. And I can make a note of that. But I can't count how many for and how many against and make my decision on that. I'll make my decision based on the criteria that we're referring to.
The petition speaks to issues they're concerned about and why they're opposing it.
Oh, okay.
So there is some information more than
that's,
just...
That's a helpful clarification. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, we've received public comment. I want to give the applicant an opportunity, if you would like, to review any of the documents that have been submitted by the public this morning and then respond to those. Lisa Klein, are you prepared to respond at this time?
I may be needing the help of some of our technical experts, but I will review the comments and respond. Ms. Allen, who spoke at first, spoke about concern for the loss of the trees on the property. My thought on that was that this property is in the urban growth area and it is zoned residential. And what that means is that if it was not developed in the manner that we're proposing today, what could very likely happen is that the entire site would be cleared for a residential project. And in that case, they would take out most all of the trees up to a certain coverage limit that is allowed in the zone, and this project is retaining far more trees than that limit.
Can you remind me if we have a mm-hmm. tree retention plan, or is that something you are proposing to do?
A tree retention plan we do not have. We did take survey of the larger trees that are located on the site. So the tree retention plan really was just to limit the scope of the improvement area to the center of the property. Go back to this one, I think, which shows much better. The trees, you know, on the eastern side, in fact, the property line on the eastern side isn't even showing there, but there's over 300 foot distance from the edge of the pavement to the eastern property line.
So that you don't intend to disturb, is that correct?
That is correct.
So lots of trees there.
Lots of trees there. Mm-hmm.
And the concern seems to be more between the development and the northern property line.
I would agree with that, yes.
And what is the plan there? Is it to remove all trees and then replant as needed, or can you give
no.
a better idea?
This graphic, it's a little bit hard to see, but there is a hatched area showing along the north line, and that is where the trees will be removed. So this I'll just kind of follow the line, which runs right along here, jogs north a little bit, and then there's no tree removal. We're going now adjacent to the sound wall. And then there's a little bit of grading for the pond that occurs right along the edge of the pond, and again, just a little bit further north. So everything north there, this existing vegetation will be retained. And then in addition to that, that will be augmented by this row of cypress trees.
Well, that, as you just indicated, doesn't seem to be all that clear. It's hard to see that. Is there any other information that you presented about tree removal along that northern property line? You spoke to it very articulately as if, well, this is what will happen, but do we have that on any document? And I'm asking that because often there's a landscaping plan that mm-hmm. is necessary or that is prepared.
Mm-hmm.
There are tree retention plans. Maybe you as a representative applicants are familiar with those. Do we have anything
yes.
similar for this proposal?
Yes, it should be in the record. There is a landscape plan. It was part of the plan set. What that landscape plan shows is in these areas where we're proposing tree retention, there are some outlines of the existing vegetation. It is very conceptual. It's intended, what they did, it's those larger trees that the surveyors pick up is what the landscape architect was using, and she outlined that those areas would be retained. The aerial, however, that you see here is far more representative because this is capturing all of the trees that are there. So,
well,
yes, there is a landscape plan. It is in the record, and it outlines tree retention area conceptual level.
I can't find it. It's not broken out separately.
Okay.
It'll be important we find that.
Just a moment.
And then you're referring to page 4 of the PowerPoint presentation you gave this morning, and the challenge there is, yes, there is a crosshatched area, but very difficult to decipher, and I don't see any measurements or even a scale where it could be measured of where that tree retention area might be or where there's a tree removal area. It's a real challenge. So, you know, what I'm going towards is, I'll give you a minute to see if you can find it in your site plan.
So the plan sets that I brought today don't include the landscape. I don't have the landscape plan that was submitted with the application for the conditional use permit.
Yeah, two of the plan sheets do show identification of the existing trees, correct?
Yes.
I have that on the stormwater grading plan and the demolition plan.
There you go.
Where they are very, they're identified anything, what, greater than 12 foot?
Correct. And those also, the demolition plan shows in general the outline of the extent of grading.
So I think what I'd want to see, and we can have this submitted, keep the record open to receive it, is what you're referring to. Do you think it does exist, the landscaping plan?
Oh, it absolutely exists. And we have subsequent to the conditional use permit have submitted site development permits because of the project schedule. So we even have a further rendition of the concept that was submitted.
Well, wouldn't you agree that would be very appropriate for the neighboring property owners, especially to the north, to be able to review a copy of that?
Sure, it has been in the record, but yes, absolutely.
Well, I don't have it in the record. So when you say it has been in the record.
It's in the county files, I know.
Okay, yeah. And that's a real difference, and I hope that there isn't any misunderstanding about that. What we create here at a public hearing is the file, the record, on which the decision is made. And it doesn't include everything that was ever submitted. You can imagine if we did that, we'd have a very thick file, and some of it has been disregarded. There's communications between staff and yourself that don't need to be part of this hearing file. But this is the record upon which the decision is made. So it's not sufficient to say, well, it's in the county record. It's not. It's not in the hearing record. And that's what's important if your client wants to receive a conditional use permit. So we need to make that available for public review. And yes, I suppose a sophisticated member of the public who's diligent could come in and see the entire county file. But typically, they're looking at the file we created at the hearing last time, and it's not in there. So how long would it take you to make that available?
Not long at all. We have it available now. We just need it's. I had thought that it was part of the record that you were provided for this hearing, the landscape plans,
it's
together
not.
With this. I had assumed that it was, so I apologize for that.
And what I would think it would do is identify, as you have on your plan set, you've identified trees of a certain caliper, and a landscape plan should identify those which would be retained. Does it do that? Do you know?
Not really. What it does is it outlines, in general, it is very conceptual. It outlines areas of native vegetation as identified on the survey. In addition to that, it shows the planting and the type of plantings that will be provided along the boundary.
Hmm.
And then it goes
show
to talk
what,
about how they would be planted. And
it does not show what trees would be protected.
It does not count the trees. Mm-hmm. It does not identify how many or how big or what type they are. No.
Well, you could do that, though. That wouldn't be difficult, would it? Particularly along the northern. We've had a lot of testimony about what vegetation, what trees would remain between the proposed development and the northern property line. And I don't have an answer to that.
Right.
But do you think you could get one?
Okay. We could certainly count the trees that were picked up on the survey. We have that data available, and we
well,
can provide
that.
Well,
not just count them, but indicate which ones would be
and which
retained.
Ones would be saved.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then the one caveat would be that there's a lot of other trees that are below that size level that will also be retained.
Retained.
Retained, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that, you could probably draw a line around those areas or somehow indicate those areas that would not be disturbed, right? And you can see how that'd be far more useful than squinting at what is now on the overhead and trying to figure out what's going to be left and what's going to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be very helpful. When could you provide that?
It would probably take a few days, I would imagine. Today's Thursday.
Within a week, anyway.
Within a week, sure.
Mm-hmm. And what I'm impressed by is that you have already developed a neighborhood contact list and sent a memo detailing responses to many of the issues that were raised. So it seems to me what might be fairly easy to do is then provide that information with your to your email list.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's how the memo went out.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you have residents that are informed about what trees might be removed and what would be saved. And it, you know, it may not be as bad as it first appears.
Mm-hmm.
That's my impression so far, looking mm-hmm. as much as I can at what you have on the overhead now. It's difficult to tell. But we have the gentleman here saying, well, it looks like there'll be no vegetation between the property line and the stormwater detention pond. It doesn't appear that's true looking
right.
at what you have here.
It is not true.
Well, then make that available.
Mm-hmm.
This is about getting information out. That's why public hearings are held, and that's why we had to return today. We need information so that those that have properties surrounding the proposed development have a better understanding, and that I, as a decision maker, have that understanding so I can make the determination that this Board of Commissioners wants me to make about mm-hmm. adverse impacts on surrounding neighborhoods. And I think we would all agree, tell me if you disagree, but if I now have property next to me that is fully treed and is basically a forest, it's an adverse impact if I see it all removed. That's the point you just made, that if it was a residential development, it might be all removed. Now, that can be done without a conditional use permit. And yes, you're right, that would be a negative impact. But it's different when you're asking for conditional use. Now we look at that impact. It's not enough to say it could be worse. We have to make a determination of whether it would be an adverse impact. So that tree plan, landscape plan, as we just discussed, showing here's the areas that will be retained and here are the areas that will be, or the trees that will be removed, very helpful
okay.
for me to make that determination. So we'll leave the record open for a week to get that
okay.
and submit it to Constance and then circulate it, if you could do that, since you have that email list,
mm-hmm.
circulate it to your neighborhood email list, and we'll give a couple of days for comments. So if we kept the record open until the end of next week, whenever you can get it out,
mm-hmm.
but no later than a week from now, but hopefully early next week.
Okay.
And then we'll keep it open for any comments that come in. Then I can consider that. And hopefully the comments will be ones that are, thank you, now I can see
mm-hmm.
what trees will be saved. Does that make sense to you?
We have no problem providing additional information if that helps clarify for everybody what's really happening up there.
I think it would.
I had hoped that what you're looking at on the screen right here was helping to convey that within that 50 feet, most of all of those trees are staying. There is a hatch line that shows the extent of the grading area there. There is the augmentation, trees that are planted to augment the gaps. And so this was intended to be conveying to you and to the neighbors what is existing and what is staying.
It begins to get there, but you heard the public testimony, as did I. It's not easy to understand it, particularly when you've gone to all the trouble of identifying all the trees.
Mm-hmm.
On your site plan for grading, they are all identified, and many of them are along this northern boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you just said, it wouldn't be hard to do to say, well, here are the ones that we've identified that are going to remain. And then here are areas which you can kind of see in this. If it's not cross-hatched, I guess it will not be disturbed. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
But, my goodness, it's kind of hard to tell mm-hmm. on this. I think it does begin to get there. But if it's on what we just talked about, kind of a landscape plan, these areas will be not removed. That gives me a document to refer to
mm-hmm.
that everyone has an understanding. So I think that'll be very helpful. Thank okay. you okay. for agreeing to do that.
Okay.
So what is that, June 17th? The record's open for that document and comments on that document. Now, you had some other responses, I'm sure.
Yeah, I thought I needed, there was something that I needed to correct that was a statement that was made at the hearing prior, and Dennis Copeland referred to it, and that was the number of buses idling at any one time. 2 weeks ago, I had made the comment that I had read that in the traffic report, and I went back and looked, and in fact, it was that statement was in the noise study. Unfortunately, our noise consultant, where he got that information, he's out of the country, so I wasn't able to find out where he got it from. But what we did was we went back and talked to the transportation folks about that. And they did not have any specific policy about regulating any certain number of buses at any one time that are idling. But the goal is no more than three minutes for idling. So I want to make that clarification.
Oh, so there's no limit. So it could be how many idling?
Well, it could be many idling at any one time. It wouldn't be all buses idling at one time based on that slow progression.
Give me a better sense of the slow progression. Does that mean five buses leaving, then wait 5 minutes, and then five more leaving?
I think it would be great to have our transportation folks answer that question.
Okay, we'll get them up here. Did you have, though, other information before we go to that?
Traffic questions, I think also Catherine Cassidy could probably speak to with regards to, there were some comments about potentially a traffic light meeting at Dickey Road and Dickey mm-hmm. Place. And then Dennis Birch could speak to the site selection process.
Well, as I already said, I don't want to go into detail on that. That's okay. Not something I can make a decision about.
I have no further comments then.
Okay, so you have someone here on idling buses mm-hmm. and someone here on the traffic light.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Let's have those people come forward. Good morning.
Good morning.
Were you here last time? Did you testify?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, please raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell truth and testimony you give today?
Yes.
Your name, please.
My name is Katie Knepper, and I'm the director with transportation for CK School District.
Spell that last name.
Knepper.
And what is your role?
I am the director for transportation.
Okay.
I'd like to speak to you about the idling and your question regarding how many buses roll off in the, you know, throughout the day, the progression. Mm-hmm. So our buses are scheduled. There are approximately three tiers of schools that we provide transportation for. And it's set up as the junior high level or middle school, high school, and then elementary. So in the morning, our middle school runs, there are about 13 buses that start that morning. However, as they're routed, they don't all leave 13 buses at the same time. We start with our runs that are the longest in length. So, for instance, if we're providing transportation for maybe the Seebeck area, it could take that bus maybe 40 minutes to get out to that area before they start picking up students and bringing them back in. That same pattern is throughout the day, up until about 9:30 in the morning.
Well, continue. Give me a parallel. So 13 are in your first run.
Approximately 13. And it really depends.
What's the next run?
Let's see. So those 13 continue through. So they do not come back to transportation. They continue through their morning. And we begin our high school runs. So in addition to those 13 that are already out on route, I am estimating that we have maybe another 20 or so that roll off. And then for the elementary round, we have those 20 plus the 13 already in service, plus I don't know what maybe 15 left, maybe 11 to 15.
Okay, so it's unlikely there are more than 25 going out at the same time.
That's very high and very unlikely.
Mm-hmm. So you're not starting 20 buses at the same time?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Well, how long, you must know this. So, okay, here we are, time to get that first run going. How long does it take for every bus on that first run to leave?
You know, they start pre-tripping 15 minutes before their morning, and so some of those folks start at...
What is pre-tripping?
They walk around their bus and do a check. They check
while the
their...
bus is idling, so
nope.
It's getting warmed up?
No, it's off.
Okay. So they start that 15 minutes before they leave.
Right, and so our first runs depart the lot at approximately 6 o'clock a.m.
Mm-hmm. For, and then how long?
Well, their morning runs end at approximately 9:30 a.m., so those buses will all be coming back to the lot and parking at that time.
Well, I'm looking at how long does it take to get out. So there goes my first one.
Oh.
On the road, 6 a.m., and then you've got another dozen or so.
I would say approximately 7 minutes total. And I think that's pretty gracious. Maybe even less than that.
So they could all be idling at the same time.
No.
If it's over 5 minutes.
I still don't think so. That's not what we have right now.
Okay.
And I do not believe that that will be the case when we move to our new facility.
So we had this come up. It was your team that raised it, said, well, there's no more than 5 buses, or maybe it was 7, we can't remember, idling at the same time. Does that make any sense to you? Is that something that you observe as director of transportation for the district?
Yes.
And what typically happens?
I think that is pretty accurate. About 7 or so is I believe, what the acoustician witnessed. And I think that's from their parking spot, backing out of their parking spot, circling the building, leaving the lot, and off they would go.
Well, that's more than idling. We're talking about just sitting in place.
Yeah, I really don't, we really try very hard to manage that 3-minute idle time.
And how do you do that? Is there someone on site that's kind of looking over what's happening with the drivers?
We have a system called Zonar, which is a GPS system, and it shows or indicates to us when the buses are on and off, and it counts that idle time for us.
Yeah, I get that, but how do you control it? So your Zonar says, wow, that bus has been idling for 7 minutes. What happens?
We can set it up to send us messages.
Send the bus a message?
We can have it set up to send a supervisor a message, like perhaps an email, or maybe with our smartphones, we can probably get it on there as well.
To the driver?
To the supervisor.
And where's that individual?
On site. We also have some of our buses equipped with a mechanism that will actually turn the bus off if it idles too long.
Really? Okay. Is that something you're moving towards?
Yes. That is very new technology, and as we are getting our buses, moving out with the old buses, moving in with the new, this is something that comes with that new bus, and we're able to set that time up.
And why is that important?
Well, we want to manage that much faster than depending on a person to read an email or some sort of message.
Mm-hmm. But why is it important to put a restriction on idling time? Why does that matter?
I think, when we're at schools and we're loading up, and if somebody maybe leaves something behind and they have to run in, it just is one of those reminders, even though they said they'll be right back in just a second, it's kind of a fail-safe, basically. In case that driver just forgets or something like that, it just shuts the engine off.
Hmm. Okay. It's not related to noise concerns or fuel consumption.
No.
It's more of a safety issue.
It's, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Did you have anything more you wanted to share?
Right. I just want to make sure that I'm clear in explaining that the driver does not leave the seat. So my example is if somebody is waiting for maybe a team, a driver is waiting in the seat, a team member runs in to go maybe get something and they take longer than they should, the driver should shut the bus off. However, in the event that they don't, it will shut itself off.
Okay. Well, you sound pretty confident that you don't really have more than seven idling at the same time, and that three-minute rule is pretty strictly enforced, both by observation, including some new technology, by auto shutoff, which is coming, and more will go that way, and then a supervisor on site that can go over and say, hey, shut it off. You've been warming up too long.
Correct.
So with that, would you agree that if it was conditioned that way, that it's something you would have no problem complying with?
I'm trying to think of any specifics. You know, there's always, you know, if there's an emergency.
Those are overrides.
Yeah, something that's.
But it's a general rule. This is no big deal. It's the way you're operating now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is the way that we're operating.
Well, that's very helpful information. Thank you for bringing it forward.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Catherine Cassidy, traffic consultant to Central Kitsap School District.
Were you here at the last hearing?
I was.
Okay. And you testified then?
I did not.
And we'll have you sworn in. Raise your right hand. You swear to tell truth and testimony you give today.
I do.
And what's Catherine? How's that spelled?
K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E.
Catherine Cassidy.
And Cassidy is C-A-S-S-E-D-A-Y.
And what do you have to share with us? First of all, you say you're a consultant?
I am a traffic engineering consultant for the district.
Professional engineer?
I am a professional civil engineer.
Okay, so you're a traffic engineer, and what do you have to share with us?
There was a comment or a request for consideration of a traffic signal at the intersection of Dickey Road and Dickey Place. I think
that's right.
Ms. Erickson raised that question, mm-hmm. or raised that issue. As part of the traffic study for this project, we did count the intersection traffic volumes at that location. Right now there's a stop control for Dickey Place, which is the south leg of the intersection. And
when you say stop control, do you mean a stop sign?
Stop sign to control that approach. Yes, sir.
Where is that located?
Lisa can give me, so here's a map giving kind of the study area.
Mm-hmm.
My pointer is just at the corner intersection of Dickey Place at Dickey Road.
Right, where's the stop sign?
And where's my pointer? The stop sign controls the south leg, Dickey Place, and the stop sign, I'll put my pointer just right about there.
So before you can make a right turn?
The free-flowing movement of traffic is Dickey Road turning to the left. Which way?
Well, the concern I heard was going south, and then the right turn from Dickey Wade.
Dickey Road itself.
Yes, whatever that leg is. Well, I guess it's still confused with Dickey Road.
Both legs are Dickey Road.
Yeah, but where's the stop sign?
And the stop sign is for the northbound approach. So just about where my...
Coming
from Dickey Place.
Okay.
And Dickey Road itself, the traffic makes a turn but does not stop.
It's a 90-degree turn.
That's right. With warning signs for, I believe it's 10 miles per hour.
Well, you heard the testimony. The suggestion was some control right there, heading south and making that right turn. Did you personally observe that intersection?
I have observed that intersection. Mm-hmm.
Did you see, as we heard testified earlier, that that is a challenging for especially larger vehicles to make that right turn?
Let's see. I have not observed that. It is a right turn. So it needs to be, the turns need to be taken at low speed. As Ms. Erickson noted, she's observed, I believe, higher speed issues and concerns at that corner. What I've observed in my study and collection of data for the traffic study, the traffic volumes through this intersection do not rise to the level to justify or meet a warrant for traffic signal.
I thought I would hear that word, warrant.
Yeah.
But what about a stop sign?
That might be considered, and I believe that the county traffic staff has looked at this intersection for safety and operation before. However, I would defer to them to actually say whether a different control is needed.
Mm-hmm. And who is them?
What them. Division would Let's that see, be? Jeff Shea.
Well, I don't mean, oh, I mean the department I mean or division.
The Department of Public Works for Kitsap County.
Okay. So it's something we don't, do you know when you looked at it, did they have any data on that? Is it something they looked at or we're not sure if they have?
I believe that they've looked at the accident, the crash history within the vicinity, but I don't know if they have looked at operation for an all-way stop or a different kind of a control.
Okay. And from your familiarity with traffic planning and traffic engineering, is there any reason why a stop sign would not be appropriate for that right turn?
Well, there are other geometric issues at the intersection. Eastbound traffic on Dickey Road is coming down the hill, approaching the corner. So I think the grades and the geometry might be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So you would agree it's something that probably should be looked at? Is it possible, not even probable, just possible that it might make that right turn safer if there was stop?
That's a little possible. I can agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there may be warrants to meet for an all-way stop that would not be met, probably not be met here.
Okay. Anything further you wanted to share?
No, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Do you have other questions?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Lisa Klein, anyone further from your team that you wanted to have testify?
No, unless you have any questions for us.
I don't have any further questions. So the record is open. Mr. Smith, did you have something? Okay. I'm aware we have hearing scheduled at 10, and it's 10:30, so I'm going to try to wrap this up.
We have a preliminary landscape plan, and it should be part of Exhibit 9. However, staff has made a copy of what should be in the record, and we'd like to resubmit it or submit it into the record as an exhibit. It is a preliminary landscape plan. It shows the areas where to be revegetated, but doesn't give the specifics on diameter of trees, etc.
Okay, is that part of the large plan set? Well, we just looked at that, and I didn't see that as part of the plan set I have, so. And I think we kind of jumped past it because at least Klein on behalf of the district has agreed.
Yeah.
It might be something like this, but with more detail. I think we had enough discussion on that so that area residents, particularly the north, are able to determine what exactly is proposed. This looks like something very similar to the aerial or to the
And there's a plant list.
PowerPoint slide we had up. Yeah, second page is a plant list. But we're looking for something a little bit different than this. I think Lisa Klein understands.
And I wanted to make a comment that it's talked about in my staff report under landscaping, is that the vegetation around the perimeter of the transportation facility is supposed to remain in perpetuity for the conditional use permit as a functional screen, as a native vegetation buffer. So if there's trees that need to fall or replaced, that is something that would need to be ongoing, provide a functional screen.
Why is that? Is that a condition that you recommended?
Well, it's part of the landscape plan. It's in the code already under 17385. And that is the standard requirement for any land use action like this.
What is? Can you be need specific?
To retain the vegetation around the transportation facility as a native vegetation easement. If this was the same concept that was included in the parking lot for Silverdale Elementary School, if you remember, that all the vegetation along Newt Anderson Road and around the perimeter of the elementary school was supposed to be retained as a native vegetation easement. Just to clarify.
That doesn't really clarify. It's in direct conflict to the testimony of the district that they will be removing significant portions of vegetation.
Well, they're removing significant vegetation for slope easements based on the geometry of the storm drainage facility. They might have to remove some trees, but they have to be replanted where possible.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. Anything further on this application? Then it looks like we're completing the public hearing today, and we're keeping the record open without any additional writing. I'm just going to announce that verbally through June 17th at noon on June 17th. And what I would want to see then, and you know, Lisa Klein, a lot of this is in your control, because the idea is to get some more detail out on the landscaping, what trees are going to be retained to your distribution list. And I assume that includes the people here today. If you did not get that earlier memo from the city, make sure you connect with Lisa Klein before you leave so that she has your email, because that's the way we're going to do it. We're using email. You'll get a copy of what the district is proposing, more specific than what we saw today, and then have an opportunity to send your comment in no later than June 17th at noon. And that material then will be added to the record that I consider before making a decision. And I'm assuming you're going to get that plan, and it can be a narrative as well as a graphic, however you want to do it. But I would think that, as you said, could go out within the first couple of days of next week. So you'll have a couple of days to look at it before you comment. So we'll keep the record open for that reason, and then I will issue my decision 10 days after the close of the record. Thank you for your cooperation this morning, your patience, and your civility. And I'm now going to adjourn this hearing, and we'll reconvene in 4 minutes for the following hearing scheduled for this morning.